What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Many of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, which is my effort to find the most interesting people in the world and sit with them for hours while I ask questions in an effort to learn. So it would mean the world to me if you would subscribe to the show on your favorite audio platform, watch episodes on YouTube, and tell your friends and family about the podcast. My goal is to help millions learn from the world's most interesting people. So let's get into today's episode. Today's episode is with Mike Novogratz. Mike is a billionaire. He's the founder and CEO of Galaxy, and he is one of the most famous macro traders in the world. This conversation was recorded at Bitcoin Investor Day. It was an annual meeting for sophisticated Wall Street investors who are interested in Bitcoin. Mike led the day off, and he did not disappoint. We talked about the macro environment, we talked about Bitcoin, we talked about the political overlay, regulation, what Galaxy is doing, and how Mike sees the next couple of months playing out. Mike always has interesting, unique thoughts. I learn something every time I talk to him, and this conversation was no different. I am very excited for you all to listen to my conversation with Mike Novogratz.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
Today's episode is brought to you by Base. Base is making it their mission to bring a billion people on chain. What exactly is Base? It's a layer 2 offering a seamless experience for both builders and users. With near zero gas fees and rapid transaction speeds, Base is shaping the future of the on-chain world. Base is a canvas for everyone with hundreds of apps in the ecosystem. Whether you're an emerging creator, a seasoned developer, or someone exploring the on-chain space for the first time, Base is designed to bring your ideas to life. So if you're looking for a platform where the future of on-chain is being built daily, Base is your destination. Join in and make on-chain the next online. Learn more at base.org or follow along on Twitter at buildonbase. Again, that's at buildonbase to see cool things to do on-chain every single day. Today's episode is brought to you by Proppy. Imagine a world where you could buy and sell your home wallet to wallet. With Prop Keys, you can mint your home address and upgrade it to a real-world asset. This not only protects your home's title from fraud, but when you are ready to move, you can sell it through an NFT auction as well as through the traditional way. There's optionality here. Proppy Keys is part of the Proppy ecosystem. Their mission is to make home ownership more efficient, affordable, and user-friendly. Proppy Keys is a fun entry point to placing title on the blockchain. Now, anyone can start their on-chain journey by minting home addresses via Proppy Keys and staking them for profit until they are ready to sell their home. Visit ProppyKeys.com to learn more. Again, that's ProppyKeys.com to learn more. We have Mike Novogratz. He's upset that I made him sit on the sidelines for 5 minutes while I did that little talk. Mike is the founder and CEO of Galaxy. They have a very, very big business, publicly traded company in Canada, hopefully to be publicly traded in the US soon. And I'm excited to talk to Mike. So Mike, come on up.
Thank you, Anthony. Good morning, everybody.
I thought a great place to start our conversation is you've been investing for a while. You have a lot of experience. You have traded currencies. You've traded macro. You've traded, I'm going to guess, almost every asset class in the world. You've been very early to Bitcoin and crypto. Today, what are the similarities to some of the other things that you've seen in terms of allocating to this asset? And why spend so much time building an asset management firm and kind of Galaxy in the form that it is, rather than sit at home with your Bitcoin and just watch the price go up?
That's a great question. Let me get to the first one. Listen, Bitcoin is a macro asset. Like, what got me into Bitcoin in 2013 when it was trading at $98 was somebody called me and said, look into this thing. And I was like, macro asset. And I was a macro trader. At that point, the story was inflation was coming, right? We had 2012, the European financial crises, and everybody was worried about inflation. It's funny how the consensus can be wrong sometimes. Paul Singer, anyone who knows Paul Singer, he might be one of the greatest investors of the last 30 years, runs Elliott Advisors, tough son of a bitch. He took an ad out in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times wanting Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Fed, to go to jail for what he was doing with QE2. Not kidding. And it was signed by 50 really intelligent people. They were so worried about inflation. And so that's why I thought, oh, you might have a Bitcoin. It's got an inflation hedge. China was buying it. There were a lot of people that had lost faith in governments, right, post-financial crises. And so I was like, macro asset, buy some. And I remember looking at the chart and saying, this thing's going to go to 1,000. And sure enough, it went to 1,000. Matter of fact, I was on the cover of the FT, the only time I've ever been on the cover of the Financial Times when I was at a conference like this. I didn't know the press was there. And I said, oh, Bitcoin's going to go up because this, this, and this. It's going to go to 1,000. And August 2013, you can find it. There I am. And then it went all the way back down. But that, I got hooked with this idea that, and you talked about this, it was the first asset that started from the little people, right? It wasn't an institutional asset where at the end the taxi cab driver buys it and it's time to sell. It was a global revolution, and it was the first global asset, right? In 2017, when we had that great bubble, that was fun, right? It was more of an Ethereum-led ICO, Bitcoin to 20,000. I remember saying over and over, like, this is the people's revolution, right? Mr. and Mrs. Watanabe in Japan, Mr. and Mrs. Kim in Korea, people in India, in Africa, in Nigeria, all over the place participating. There are no global markets, really, right? Gold is a global market. But in the 1999 tech bubble, that was a US bubble, right? There was a few people that participated in outside, but broadly Japanese people buy Japanese bonds, right? And so here's the first global asset. And it was, you know, people driven. And so I started this way, way early, this tagline, the herd is coming. And, you know, boy, did I feel silly for years. I was talking about the institutional herd, right? I was one of the first institutional guys, me, Dan Moorhead, there were a few of us to start telling the Bitcoin story to institutions. And most of them just said, oh, that's really interesting, close. A few intrepid, you know, you guys had Fairfax County, you know, got in early, but very few institutions did. And so I look back, if I made a mistake in my Bitcoin journey, it was probably building an institutional business when I should have started with retail, because it really was a people's business. Let me ask you this, answer the second question. Why did I start a damn company instead of just be a fund manager or manage my own money? Because it's so much easier to manage your own money. You own Bitcoin, Ethereum. I think the way you stay young in life is work with young people and learn new things. And while I'd been a macro investor my whole life, I wasn't a venture investor. I'd made a couple venture investments. And you can't be in crypto without being venture, right? Pomp has become a great venture investor from being kind of a, you know, media celebrity. Now he's a better venture investor than he is a media celebrity, right? Crypto is about venture and macro. It's this weird hybrid. So I got to learn a new business venture and I got to work with young people. And my third box I needed to check to go back into the arena was that I needed to think I had something to add. And, you know, Wall Street beats you up and rings you out and slaps you in the face over 25 years, but you'd like to think you gained some wisdom. And most of the crypto community was young, at times naive, full of big ideas, sometimes silly. And I thought I had some role to play at trying to bring some wisdom to this community and trying to get the older stodgy crypto institutional community to understand it. And so it checked all my boxes.
So the herd is coming. I think now we can say the herd is here. Talk a little bit as to institutions that are actually participating in the space. Obviously ETFs are a big part of the conversation, but how do you think about what institutions have done so far and what should we expect them to do over the next couple of years?
Yeah, listen, we should all like give Larry Fink a standing ovation. You know, and there was a whole army of people that orange pilled him. One day someone will write the book, The Orange Pilling of Larry Fink. Right, he was a Bitcoin skeptic and he realized, wait a minute, these guys aren't crazy. That is the process of how Bitcoin evolves. Every one of you has a responsibility in some way to do what you can for the community. Like, all I can do is sell in life. And so my responsibility has not been coding. It's been selling, trying to convince people why this makes sense. Larry has a far bigger platform than I'll ever have. And, you know, I thank the guys that got him to see. I think that's staggeringly important. BlackRock's the largest asset manager in the world. He's one of the most recognized thinkers. But it's now not just Bitcoin and the ETF, right? They announced this week they're filing with the SEC to do a tokenized digital assets fund. So what are they going to tokenize? I mean, Larry said it. They're going to try to tokenize money market funds. And well, that would be revolutionary, right? Think about it right now. Stablecoins don't pay interest. The dollar doesn't pay interest. Anyone have a dollar in your pocket? No interest. Put it in a bank, it makes 5.5%. Well, actually, put it in a bank at JP Morgan, it makes zero. But you can get 5.5% in a money market fund, but in your pocket, it makes zero. So if we can start tokenizing, I don't think they'll get that through, but that's what they're going to push. And so you're going to see, not in the next 3 months, but in the next 3 years, assets get tokenized, minority stakes in sports teams, funds, real estate maybe. And so I would tell you that every bank, every big bank has teams working like crazy on this idea because they're scared. If we move to a tokenized world, Goldman Sachs better be in it, Citibank better be in it, Bank of New York better be in it, State Street better be in it. And so there's a lot of activity in institutions around that piece. There's a lot of activity around, okay, Bitcoin's here, the ETF is here. It had a greater start than any ETF in history by a quantum. I tweeted this a minute. The American people just voted, right? They voted, they like crypto, they like Bitcoin, they like digital assets. And so bank CEOs, bank boards, Congress has to take note.
So you've had some tussles on the regulatory front. You sometimes tweet some things and I say, okay. You also like to talk about politics. So how does Bitcoin fit into those two conversations, right? In terms of the regulatory conversation, you all are in Canada. I think that you'd like to come to the US. What's stopping that? And then how does Bitcoin play into an election year where politicians, some seem very excited about it, but others feel, you know, the people on the internet are stupid?
Yeah, that's a good question. AI should tweet less.
That's true for all of us.
You know, there's this interesting tension. The crypto community is young and fun and full of memes, and so you want to participate in it. And when you run a regulated company, you got to be very careful because the amount of scrutiny that Galaxy and I'm sure Coinbase and everyone else gets is 4x what we got when we were hedge funds. And so even participating in meme coins, I don't as much as I'd want to, because I just fear if I like tweet, God, I love dog with hat like Arthur Hayes does, I will literally be investigated 2 days later by the CFTC. And so we hold ourselves to a different standard. And we've learned that as the process goes. And I'm not knocking Arthur. I love the guy. And I love dog with hat, just the spirit of it. Bitcoin got through the gauntlet. It is now a non-asset. It doesn't need to be regulated by the SEC. And so anything associated with Bitcoin, like Bitcoin miners trade publicly, and you can still get through the SEC if you just do Bitcoin. It appears Gensler and his SEC has drawn the line with Ethereum. And it's a little ironic. He spoke about Ethereum at a conference Galaxy hosted 4 or 5 months before he took the job at the SEC, when he specifically said it is not a security, right? Since he's been there, and this is my supposition, I don't know if it's true, I think if you allow Ethereum to not be a security, it's a slippery slope. What does that mean for Cardano or Polkadot or any one of the other, you know, level twos or side chains or base chains, or like, what is the test if you let one? And so it feels they've drawn this line between proof of work and proof of stake. And I don't think that changes until the SEC changes. I think the SEC will change no matter who wins the election, Democrats or Republicans. If it's a Republican, I think you'll get much faster pro-crypto changes than if it's a Democrat. You know, the Democratic thing, and I'm a Democrat, I raise my hand, has driven me insane because I've been going to DC a lot. Hakeem Jeffries, Chuck Schumer, the guys that run the House and the Senate for the Democrats. Sorry about that.
That's Gary Gensler calling him right now.
God damn it, Gensler! These guys want bipartisan legislation. They see crypto as bipartisan. It is bipartisan. But a small faction, right? Elizabeth Warren, you know, Sherrod Brown, unfortunately, has kind of gotten on her bandwagon. It feels like people in the White House, Lil Brainerd, have broadly, certainly Gary, have broadly said, we don't like crypto. And in DC, you know, small factions can hold up the whole process. And I think the Democrats are getting the message I just said. The American people have just voted and they voted Bitcoin, right? This, like, when you're in politics, you've got to be careful that you don't get so tied up on what you want versus what is. And so this is going to be a losing issue for Democrats. There are a bunch of PACs that have been formed, crypto PACs that are putting money against vulnerable Democratic senators. The Democrats understand that and see that happening. And so it won't surprise me to see them pivot to at least a more neutral stance. So I think we get legislation, but it's an unbelievably frustrating. Last year has been frustrating. I think this year will be frustrating until the election.
So as someone who's traded macro assets for a long time, you pay a lot of attention to what the Fed's doing, global liquidity, interest rates, many other aspects that go into that analysis. Are the institutions looking at some of those same drivers? Or do you think the institutions are basically saying, okay, we now want to allocate to Bitcoin, they're going to allocate, and those allocations are persistent regardless of the macro environment?
Listen, so Bitcoin has and always has had, and probably always will have, two vectors that drives price. Jesus, Jesus.
That was Elizabeth Warren.
Someone heard me. The two vectors have always been macro, right? Why Bitcoin, right? And so that's the same broad story as gold, silver, other hard assets. And adoption. So right now, adoption's way overwhelming because we've just tapped into, so here are the numbers. There's $84 trillion of wealth, trillion, owned by U.S. baby boomers. Baby boomers are broadly 60 to 80 years old. They are entering into their die-off phase. they broadly invest through registered investment advisors. You call your broker at, you know, Dean Witter or Morgan Stanley or AJ Edwards and say, hey, what's my portfolio? Put a little bit here. That is the ETF process, and it has just started. And so early, big adoption, a lot of the smaller platform regional brokers have been buying, but a lot of the big platforms like Morgan Stanley, and they're still not selling yet. They're going to. They're getting prepared to. You can buy it on their platform, but the salesmen aren't selling it. And one thing I learned about Bitcoin, it's always sold. It's not bought. Somebody sits down and explains it to you, right? What's the macro story of Bitcoin? It's relatively simple. Our government can't keep its pants on and is spending too much money. And when you spend more money than you take in, you depreciate your currency. And that went from a problem in the early 2000s, 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, to a crisis with Donald Trump, right? And then Joe Biden. Trump and Biden will go down as the two presidents who destroyed our fiscal stability. Right? Trump raised government spending a ton before COVID. And then when COVID happened, it was, you know, let the dogs out. Biden came in and said, now I've got this cover to run my progressive agenda that helped me get elected. And I'm doubly panicking on the COVID, you know, relief. And so we went from, and this is a little nuanced, but it's important to understand. We went from a government that believed at our core that the federal government is allowed to spend 20% of GDP every year, and we try to tax 20%. My first job in life was working at the Office of Management and Budget under Ronald Reagan, 1984. And I learned that. You tax 20, you spend 20. We did it 1 year, 1999, with Bill Clinton. Since I've been post-college, the budget has been balanced 1 year in America, right? But we got close, 2% deficit, 3% deficit. We're now running structural 5, 6, 7% deficits in a good economy, right? Keynesian economics says you're supposed to run deficits in a bad economy and run surpluses in a good economy. We've normalized spending 25% of GDP on federal government. That's this year's budget, next year's budget, the following year's budget. That happened like this. It happened between Trump and Biden, and that's insane. If you take the Congressional Budget Office's predictions, which are always rosy, right? They always are more optimistic than they should be. In 25 years, it has debt to GDP at 250%. Like, that is a recipe for housing prices going higher, Bitcoin going higher, gold going higher, silver going higher. And until you see a government, both Dems and Republicans, that say enough, we are going to go back to a Simpson-Bowles balanced budget amendment. We are going to cut spending from 25% back to 18 or 19%. Bitcoin is going to keep going higher.
What about countries that are adopting Bitcoin? We've seen El Salvador, you know, they're taking custody of their Bitcoin. They've got 5,000 something Bitcoin. Argentina, we now have somebody who's stepping in, who's slashing, you know, spending and trying to really economically revamp the country. Is that stuff, one, going to work? And two, do you see some of these countries actually going on to like a Bitcoin standard?
I don't think they'll go on a Bitcoin standard, but I think they'll buy Bitcoin. Listen, if the whole world blows up, you never know what comes next. I go to bed every night and I pray the whole world doesn't blow up. I actually, quite frankly, would rather have Bitcoin go up slowly than go to a million overnight, because that would make us all wealthier. We would lose civil society. Like, you can't have wealth shifts like that without revolution. And so what's happening in places? Look at the Nigerian currency. When you get back to your computer, look at the Nigerian currency the last week, right? So you have people that lose half their wealth. And so in places with terrible stewardship of economies, Bitcoin should be a human right, or some store of value, right? Most people would still rather have the dollar. And so it's insane that our government hasn't propagated a dollar-based stablecoin. I mean, we do with Tether. Right? Tether is the global dollar-based stablecoin. USDC is a more regulated version of Tether. But the U.S. government should be helping, because if you're in Nigeria, we'd rather, as a U.S. government, have them buy dollars than Bitcoin, right? We are so obsessed with who might be buying our currency than the fact that we've got the largest deficits in the history of the world to finance. Like, we should let every Russian who wants to buy our currency, you know, fund our debt. And so I think this is a geopolitical mistake in stable coins, but you're going to see a lot of activity around this. Because, again, Argentina said our currency went to hell in a handbasket. We got to do something. So you've got this new right-wing president who says, okay, we're going to, you know, ban the central bank, and we're going to go on, in essence, a hard money standard.
My last question is around Galaxy. You guys have built a pretty big business. Seems like things are quite successful. You just announced $10 billion in assets under management for your asset management business. You're in Canada. I know that there has been a lot of talk online that the company trades at a lower book value. Talk a little bit as to how you think about the business. How do you guys make money? Canada versus US markets.
So caveat, we have earnings on Monday. And so I got to be a little careful what I say. Like, our business feels great. And the institutions are finally coming in partnerships, in activity, in... And so when I look at the forward roadmap, we have an amazing roadmap. Our challenge, of course, is now to go execute it, right? We have three basic business lines. One is infrastructure. We've got a big Bitcoin mine down in Texas, 200 megawatts, 5x a hash, with a lot of growth potential. It's probably the best piece of dirt in Texas when it comes to Bitcoin mining. And we mine Bitcoin cheaper than anybody. That's partly because of our power trading, partly because of our location, and partly because of our cost. And so, great, check. If that was a public company in the US, it would trade like CLSK or Marathon or Riot, you know, at a 4 or 5 times book. Our stock trades, you know, somewhere between book and 1.3 times book, depending on the day. We are building out a staking business very quickly. We're going to make some announcements soon, but that business is growing really fast. And I think there's a synergy with that business and some of the other businesses that we have, right? Your trading businesses, your Galaxy wants to be the group that covers both people in the institutional world and the big crypto players. So you go to a protocol and you offer them staking and market making as a service and then asset management, and you become their partner. Our trading, what traditionally our markets business, which is sales, trading, derivatives, we are one of the biggest derivative players. There's a level you get to in total derivatives where you have to become a registered derivative player. The bad news is, it's pretty costly. it's a Gensler tax in terms of compliance. The good news is you've gotten there, and there's a barrier to entry for the rest of the people. And so our derivative business has gotten there. It's our best business in sales and trading. We've got a big lending business, and our prime business is finally getting up and running, and that's going to be growing really quickly. And so those are the businesses that feel like what Goldman Sachs used to feel like to sales and trading in crypto. But at the same time, we're building the on-chain capabilities because we see that's where the future is coming. And so we've got a big on-chain effort going on right now. That's both lending and on-chain. It's trading on-chain. And so that's where I see a lot of the next year optimism coming. And then in asset management, we just announced we've got $10 billion assets. That's partly because assets have gone up, partly because we've done a lot of this bankruptcy work for FTX and others. You know, it's close to 500 or 450 people on our way to 600. I feel like it's an undervalued franchise. We are patient. People give me shit on Twitter all day long about, you know, he said he was going to go to the NASDAQ and he never did. I was like, do you think that was our choice? Right? We have an SEC that has not allowed companies that deal with anything other than Bitcoin, you know, through the process. And that's not Galaxy specific. There's Bullish, there's eToro, there's plenty of companies that we're trying to get through. And so, listen, we are engaged with them all the time. We're engaged with all the regulators. We want to be public, but we'll see.
Leave us with your price prediction for this bull market.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was on CNBC, last week, and they asked people where we're going. I said, listen, you know, I think you got to be careful. You've had a huge run. Markets rarely take out three-year highs that are 300% up and just keep going straight through, right? They correct. And I said, well, maybe you could go to 53,000. Now I think I jinxed us. That's why I apologize. It feels like 53, 55 should be the floor. We're at 62 now. I hope 60 is the floor, and it's going to take some time before we take out that 73 again. I really do believe that within 12 months, we're significantly higher. You know, when you have a whole new world starting to buy, you go into price discovery. And so I can draw a line and say, like, listen, 100 was my target because it felt like a good round number. How do I even think about Bitcoin conceptually, I think of gold, right? Market cap of gold is $13 trillion, right? Market cap of Bitcoin right now at 65,000 times two is what, $1.4 trillion? So we're like one-tenth of gold. Could we be 20% of gold in 2 years? Of course we could, right? What I say early, 85 trillion of wealth in the United States between 60 and 80 years old. As they die, that money goes to younger people who are much more comfortable with buying dog with hat or Bitcoin or Ethereum or Solana.
Mike Novogratz, everyone.
Thanks, guys.